Welcome to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. This is a show for listeners wanting to learn more about the ins and outs of the private securities brokerage landscape. Each episode will feature insightful conversations with the world's leading investment bankers, placement agents, capital providers, startup CEOs, and more. And with that, let's get into the show. All right, Gaurav Bhasin, thank you so much for joining us here on the Pencils Down podcast.
Thank you, Federico, for having me over to connect.
I usually like to start by asking our guests to share a little bit about their backgrounds and their path into investment banking. Share a little bit about what the formative experiences were that ultimately led you, Gaurav, to start Allied Advisors.
Yeah, thanks, Federico. A bit about my background is I actually grew up in India, and then I moved to the U.S. for college. I think that was fortunate for me because it kind of gave me a little bit of a global perspective, what it is to, you know, grow up in a different country and then have a professional career in a different country. When I came here, I studied engineering. I was actually in a PhD program. I left after my master's. I got a master's in engineering. I worked as an engineer after getting my master's, and then I was promoted to become a management professional at a tech company. What this did for me is that it enhanced my professional experience in terms of what it is to work in a tech company, what does it take to build and sell products. And this experience comes in pretty handy when I'm advising clients because it's a bit of an atypical background, in that I didn't spend my entire career in investment banking. I get a little bit of a broader perspective. What I did after working at a tech company is actually ended up doing business school while I was working full time. And that helped me pivot into investment banking. So here I was with a background in engineering, having worked at a tech company, and then ended up doing business school in finance. And then from there, I shifted to investment banking. I got my start at a bulge bracket bank. I worked at Bank of America Securities. It's an excellent experience in corporate finance. We used to do large cap transactions, generally above half a billion. This is even back in 06. Ended up taking a company public as a sole book runner, did a follow-on offering for them, did a lot of debt and M&A transactions. You know, it was a good experience, but I always sort of resonated towards what I would say middle market, broadly defined. These are transactions between 20 million sale value to 200 million sale value. I just felt that there's more volume in the middle market, number one. Number two is, I think as a banker, the impact and value you can add to clients is actually much, much higher working in mid-market than trying to do the $3, $4 billion transactions where the companies are pretty well-formed. They've got a pretty good in-house corp dev team, good general counsel in-house. And that's exactly what I've been doing, frankly, for the last 14 plus years. I worked at two different boutique banks, both of which were highly successful. I spent 11 years at the two firms. One of the firms I was at ended up getting acquired by Duff & Phelps. They were public, then they got taken private by Carlyle. So you can imagine they are a pretty large firm. They were doing north of several billion in revenue. I was a managing director there. After the transaction, I stayed for about 4 years. And then I got called to join another investment bank, which was a bit smaller. So I went there because I like smaller environments. We also ended up getting acquired. And this time I just stayed for about a year after the transaction. What was happening for me then was a lot of my deal flow was just coming in through people I'd worked for versus using the logo of the firm. And then I was also sort of in a place where, you know, larger firms are very template driven. They kind of like to do deals of a certain size, a certain sector, and they kind of put, I would say, bankers in silos that you should only do this sector and you should only do this sector and this size. And for me, my network was quite broad. My deal experience was quite broad. My geography was quite broad. And I just felt that at larger banks, I was being told more things I couldn't do than the things I could do. And my wife said to me, Gaurav, you get all these deal flow coming to you, and a lot of them you say no to. Why don't you go start your own firm? And I said, really? And that to me was kind of the motivation to kind of start Allied Advisors. So what I did is I actually started Allied Advisors in sort of January of 2019. And, you know, it's been a pretty good run for us. We've closed a lot of transactions, but my wife kind of nudged me, you know, just seeing the deal flow coming in, I already had the product market fit. So that's what kind of, you know, led me to start Allied Advisors. I'd worked for others for 20 plus years. I was a senior managing director at two large firms. And, you know, with my experience in my Rolodex, I was just getting deal flow organically versus relying on larger firm. And then my wife nudging me helped me go start Allied Advisors.
Yeah, there's a lot there in that, you know, there's obviously a fundamental difference between building and scaling a book of business in the context of a bulge or a large boutique and starting your own firm. But let's dig in a little bit on Allied itself. You know, Allied Advisors brands itself as a tech-focused advisory firm. Now, obviously, the tech space has been an incredibly dynamic one over the last couple of decades, at least from an M&A perspective. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you would characterize Allied's track record to date since launching in 2019 in light of, you know, some of the market turmoil that we've seen both in the immediate aftermath of the COVID pandemic, the setting of the COVID pandemic in 2020, and some of the market kind of turmoil that we're seeing today in light of obviously both the Ukraine crisis as well as in the inflation that we're seeing in the markets. Tell us a little bit about kind of how you've navigated these twin challenges.
Yeah, happy to. So, you know, first of all, a big thanks to the trust from our clients for giving us their mandates, whether it's hopping them on an exit or raising capital for them. These are very important transactions for our clients, and we are very thankful to be able to get the opportunity to represent them. You know, since starting the firm, we are now approaching nearly 20 closed transactions, a third of which have been cross-border. So I think that's a pretty phenomenal achievement, you know, especially considering we had COVID, which none of us in a lifetime have seen something like this. Just to give you some examples, we advised a client on an exit to a global icon, IBM. This happened in June of 2020 when there were not many transactions taking place. IBM did the deal because they wanted to boost their cloud offering, and they also, you know, wanted to get a big team in India along with a management team in the US. We advised a client on their sale to the largest IT firm in the world, Deloitte. We advised a client to the largest game network in the world, Activision Blizzard Kings. I'm sure your kids play Candy Crush, or you might play Candy Crush along with some of the other games they make. We did that transaction. We helped a client exit to a top five U.S. staffing company doing $6 billion in revenue. We helped a client raise growth financing from Spotlight, which is a leading private equity firm. And some of our other deals were financed by other private equity firms such as Francisco Partners, Marlin Equity Partners, Clear Lake, and many others. We were fortunate to do deals across different sectors of software, both application software, infrastructure software. We helped advise clients globally. That was the thesis from day one, that we should work with clients globally. We went and proved that. We helped clients in Canada, in Europe, in US-India corridor, as well as Israel. And we also helped clients from the Bay Area and other parts of the US, you know, on transactions. Last but not least, you know, some of our work was picked up in the Barron's, in the Wall Street Journal, TechCrunch, Crunchbase. We were on the front page of the Calculist, and many other publication outlets. So I would say we are quite thankful to have this record of success. We are going to announce another two transaction closing in the next 4 to 6 weeks from now. One is going to be with a Fortune, top five Fortune company, and another one is going to be with a leading private equity firm. So what I would say is we are thankful to close transactions with some of the best known strategic and the private equity firms in the world. Now, with regards to your next question, you know, M&A has been very choppy, right? The markets have been pretty strange. You had COVID, things kind of shut down, and then, you know, there was a lot of activity. And then, you know, now we're kind of in this weird environment with high inflation and Ukraine war and other factors which are affecting things. But I think one of the things that kind of helped us is the senior bankers have a lot of experience, right? I personally have done deal making for a little over 16 years. So we have lived through downturns of 08, 01. We have lived through other crises. So we kind of know how to get transactions done. I think we also us bankers at Ally know which buyers have a strong need for our client capabilities, you know, and that's why we've been able to approach these buyers and investors and be able to get transaction done to the benefit of our clients. So since COVID alone, we closed 13 transactions, two more closings, so we'll have 15 closing. And the other thing we've also done is we have run very tight processes where we know how to go to buyers effectively and get transaction done for our clients. I hope that answers the question.
Yes, it did. Yeah, no, thank you so much for that. And I guess like, one curiosity I have, you know, specifically as it relates to COVID, you know, so much about deal making is about building and growing a human relationship. I'd be curious to get your perspective on how this exogenous shock actually impacted the way in which you went about engaging in business development and actually supporting your clients to get deals done.
Yeah, you know, good question. It's funny, you and I are talking on a video call, and 2 years before COVID, we wouldn't be doing video calls. We would be doing phone calls, right? I think video has become the norm these days. While not perfect, at least it helps you see the facial, expressions. I can tell whether you're resonating with my message or you have concerns about my message. In fact, very early on in June, when we did the transaction with IBM, not many banks were doing transactions. We actually wrote a blog post on M&A in sort of virtual environments. Can deals be done? And that kind of became a Bible for us, frankly, for our clients. Like, how do they conduct themselves and how do they get transactions done in this virtual world where you don't have the benefit of having a dinner the night before or dinner the day of the meeting, you know, to develop that personal rapport. And I think what happened is the buyers and investors started to get comfortable with the idea that, you know, technology transformation is happening, digital transformation is happening. They need to invest in these technologies and buy these companies so they can, you know, be part of this acceleration ahead. So we kind of worked around it. You know, in some ways, I think virtual deal making accelerated because now we didn't have to fly across the country to have the first initial meeting. We would have the first few calls virtually and then quickly come to the conclusion, are we a good fit or not? And then if we were a good fit, we would actually go meet with the person. Candidly, we closed probably 8 to 10 deals where the buyer and seller didn't even meet each other. The transaction closed and they met each other, frankly, about 6 months to a year after the transaction closed. And I think folks have gotten comfortable kind of working in a virtual environment. The other thing I would say is we also bank sectors that I would call where mission critical. Mission critical means that you can't live without it. So we generally tend to focus on B2B SaaS businesses. So just to give you an example, we worked on a collaboration software company, right? You and I are talking through Zoom, Teams. This company enabled whiteboard collaboration. So they were in hot demand when we actually ended up advising them on exit. We did 4 deals on security sector, right? Security became more critical, especially with working from home. You know, imagine the number of attacks you can have working in a home environment versus an office environment. With Russia and other factors, you know, the security companies became pretty hot. So we advised on 4 deals in security. We also worked on an infra software company where my client grew 3x during the pandemic and they saw their business kind of growing. So we were fortunate for some of these clients that they were in sectors that actually benefited from COVID, and they're actually still long-term beneficiary, even though I would call the COVID boost has gone. They're still seeing their business grow and thrive. We did have some clients which had a little bit of a shock, and I'll kind of get to that in a minute. But outside of that, it's people got comfortable doing things, and I think we were able to guide our clients to good outcomes.
Do you see kind of deal making reverting to how things were pre-pandemic with respect to conference attendance and folks needing to, you know, meet one another in person to engage with a new banker or explore an investment opportunity? I mean, and to the extent that you see it reverting, you know, what are the contexts where you see that playing out?
Yeah, so in fact, it's funny you mentioned conferences. I was in SASTER Barcelona recently. I was in Collision in Toronto recently. I think generally when we meet companies, they're just happy to meet people. In fact, I just met with a client yesterday and we both were saying, oh, I thought you were 6 feet tall. He said, no, I thought you were 6 feet tall. But both of us happened to be 5 feet nine. I think people just kind of like meeting each other. I think there's a little bit of awkwardness, which people are getting comfortable with. But I think at the end of the day, M&A is a very human business. Investing in the very human business. You know, folks like to meet each other and say, can I hang out with this person? Can I invest in this person? Can I trust this person? And I think the visual cues, ability to just kind of, you know, break bread and have a conversation goes a long way. So I do think, you know, you will have that in-person meeting. It's going to be hybrid, right? It's not going to be all virtual. It's also not going to be back in the days where for the first meeting, you would fly 3,000 miles to New York or some other location to meet with a buyer or investor. I think folks realize there's a lot of efficiency gain that can be done virtually, but, you know, they do want to come together and make sure that, is there a cultural fit? You know, is this an organization I want to be a part of for the next 5 years as an investor, or is this an organization that believes in our mission and I want to acquire to kind of grow forward? So I think you will see a hybrid environment, which I think will be the best of all worlds, because there'll be some efficiencies and time savings for all.
It's an incredibly interesting topic. And to get back to it, I mean, one of the curiosities I had, Gaurav, was with respect to a stable of clients that you might have had in the past that perhaps were significantly affected by, the market contexts. Share a little bit about how you have in the past helped clients navigate these contexts, and, you know, and to what extent does that fundamentally change a strategy that you might employ with them?
You know, while I would say a lot of our clients were in mission critical sectors, COVID kind of changes what is mission critical and what is not mission critical. So we had an excellent client who was in the HR tech software recruiting space. We actually launched the process for them in January of 2020, and they were growing nicely, and then COVID hit. And guess what? Nobody was hiring. People just didn't know what to do. Big companies put the hiring on freeze. And you could see immediately this company's revenue dropped 30, 40%. And for no fault of theirs, it's just the economy changed, right? Nobody was hiring. Our advice to them was, you know, control your cost. So you have the wherewithal and runway that you can have a viable business coming out of it. We told them, look, things always change. Things may get worse, but they do eventually get better. We said, focus on your existing clients and try to, you know, grow them to the extent you can. The client took our advice. We put the process on pause, given some of the changes in the macro environment. But we were right about this. You could see the business kind of pick up, you know, post in 2021. People said, you know what, we need more tech talent. We need more technology professionals. They started to see an increase in their recruiting activities. The business rebounded nicely. In fact, it even exceeded the expectation they had set for the year. Then we went to them and said, let's run the process again. And this time we ended up finding a nice buyer who wanted to get into this HR tech marketplace business. They were doing recruiting the traditional way, which wasn't scalable. They realized they needed technology, and they did a big transaction with our client, and it turned out to be a nice outcome for them. So, you know, that was an example where the transaction didn't proceed in the 6 to 9 months we had planned, but then waiting for a bit till the environment improved along with their own business performance improvement, we were able to find a nice buyer for them. So the moral of the story is, you know, always make sure you have the wherewithal to kind of stay the course. You can't control the external factors, but control what you can. And these guys did an excellent job controlling their business, you know, stabilizing the ship, getting some of the cost structures in control. And then frankly, they rebounded very nicely when the hiring came back.
That's a really great turnaround story. So thank you so much, Gaurav, for sharing.
Sure.
One curiosity I had was, you know, obviously you've now been managing Allied for, I think it's around 3 years now, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sure in the course of that journey, there have been a fair share of ups as well as downs. And one of the things that I was curious about was, you know, as you kind of embarked on this entrepreneurial path, what's something that you've tried at the firm that has surprised you or resulted in an outcome that you didn't quite expect or anticipate?
Yeah. Thank you for that. And, you know, we are now actually just hit a 3.5 year mark. So we're pretty close to the 4 year mark. So
congratulations.
Time kind of flies. Thank you. When you're having fun. When I started Allied Advisors, you know, our vision was to help clients on their most important initiative, whether it's to find the right buyer for them that will help them grow and make their dreams and vision bigger, or investor who will help them scale and become even bigger. What we were really surprised by and actually thankful for is that we were able to close transaction with the top 50 Fortune 500 companies, you know, guys that are household names that everyone in the technology space knows about. We were able to get our clients to do transactions with them successfully, as well as close transaction with some of the top private equity funds in the world. These are, you know, $10, $20 billion funds, right, which have appreciated what our clients have built, both from a revenue perspective and technology perspective. The other thing which was kind of refreshing for us is we won some deals against some of the larger banks, you know. And the reason the clients told us this is that you guys come from the larger bank and you guys have done those deals, and we feel we'll get more personal attention from you guys than, you know, at the larger bank where we'll be one of many clients. And I think that really was refreshing to hear. And frankly, it motivated us even more to do a good job for our client. And just some outcomes, you know, which was kind of interesting for us is, you know, while being based in the Valley, headquartered in the Valley, we actually helped a client in Canada get sold to a buyer in the UK. We recently advised a software testing company. We sold them to Marlin Equity, which was interesting. Software testing is a mature space. A lot of private equity guys there. We were actually able to find a buyer outside of the testing space because they were in deals where they were competing with these big testing software houses owned by the big PE firms. And they said, oh my God, if we acquire this company, we have now something to bring to the battlefield when we go get these clients. So we were able to find a buyer outside the space. We recently helped the leading machine learning company from Stockholm, Sweden, sell to the largest game network in the world, Activision Blizzard, where the technology can be deployed to billions of users. So, and you know, every client of ours has a unique story. So I think, you know, because of our creativity, because of us being doing these marquee transactions, what's happening is each of these deals are becoming like a virtuous cycle, right? Each of these deals are giving us one, two, two, or three, or four more deals from just getting these transactions done because they see the good work we do there. And a board member or an investor or a lawyer or an entrepreneur in the deal says, can you do the same for this other company of ours? And I think that really helps us. So frankly, thankful to do this. Every day we wake up and one thing we just look for is how can we make our clients successful? Because by doing so, we become successful. So that's really something, you know, we're quite proud of.
Incredibly enlightening. And I would be remiss if I didn't just point out an observation, which is that, you know, many of the transactions that you're referencing involved a significant cross-border implication. And I'm sure that many of those transactions were ultimately quite complex, and not just because they involved multiple countries and legal jurisdictions, but by their very nature with respect to how they were structured. I'm sure that a number of our listeners are interested in cross-border deal making. And to those that are starting out in the industry or are thinking about diversifying their investment banking business to include more cross-border transactions, I'd be curious to know what, to your mind, what you think are the 2 to 3 most valuable skills that an investment banker engaging in cross-border deal flow might want to have in their toolkit and how they might deploy those skills most efficiently.
So I think there's a combination of soft skills and hard skills in some ways. You know, I think one of the first things investment banker has to realize is that the world has become quite global, that the Silicon Valley way of living and building things is now being replicated in many parts of the world, thanks to the cloud and everyone having the entrepreneurship bug. So you just have to recognize that and appreciate that. And once you know that, you have a better understanding when you go serve these clients. The other thing I would say is, you know, be aware of cultural nuances, you know, how deal making gets done in different environments. You know, I think ability to build rapport with clients in different geographies is an important skill set. I think us being based in the Valley is a differentiator, but also us having done deals across the world is also valuable because they see us as a gateway to, frankly, the buyers and the investors. A lot of them are still who are based in the US. I would say 90% of the buyer universe is here, but you know, a lot of the clients are all over the world. And I think ability to kind of straddle both sort of the seller and the buyer geographies is a helpful skill to have. And I think at the end of the day, it can be a little bit tiring, but rewarding. Because you are working across different time zones, right? So you got to realize when you're working with Europe, you're going to be generally up earlier in the morning and kind of going a little bit later in the day. And understanding, you know, what the strengths of each region are, right? Like, I think when you pick up, let's say, India, for example, you can get a lot of talent for, frankly, good pricing, but then the turnover may be higher in certain regions, right? And how do you articulate those kind of value propositions to a buyer or investor will kind of help you a long way in getting transactions done.
I'd be curious to know, Gaurav, if you might share with our listeners something that Allied Advisors has recently achieved that you're really proud of. And along those lines, what lessons might you share with our listeners to give them insights on how their own paths in iBanking can similarly be productive and meaningful?
In terms of what we are most proud of is having closed nearly 15 transactions since the COVID pandemic, a lot more about to close. I think these have been done in what I would call choppy markets. We've been able to do a good job, and the client testimonials kind of tell you that. Having done deals in virtually every sector of the globe, you know, successfully, having been picked up in some of the best publications in the world. You know, in fact, I'll give you a story here. Back in 2020, when everyone was writing about how the world is coming to an end, I was looking at all the negative news. I was like, gosh, this is tiring me out. I actually ended up writing a blog post and said, guys, we've had this before. We've had SARS, MERS, Ebola before. This is a new virus. Yeah, nobody knows when it's going to finish, but it's going to come to an end. And guess what it did? You know, we've had downturns like 01, 08 before. The world became better. And I said the world will become better. And it did. TechCrunch actually picked up an article and published it. That's when we realized there's actually a market demand for what we write, because the reports we write are not necessarily the canned reports you would see from the larger banks, because they're like just template driven, updated for comps. We do those as well. But I think we write reports which are like, hey, you're selling a company, earn out, have you thought about it? Things to think about, right? And we have actually been complimented by both sellers and buyers. You know, those reports are very thoughtful because they are a little bit different than what we are seeing, you know, published by the banks. And that's because we take the time and effort to write it. And we want to keep educating the market. We open source it so we don't put it under lock and key. These are for folks to see and just be aware of how things get done, how deals get transacted, and putting our own best practices, frankly, to the benefit of everyone, whether they're a client or not, just so that, you know, M&A and capital raises become more efficient for the benefit of all.
No, I think that those are some really great observations, and I think also just a reflection of, you know, who you are, Gaurav, as a person and as a professional, and the values that you're instilling in how Allied Advisors is growing and scaling. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Are there any future plans that you would like to share with the listenership with respect to Allied Advisors and kind of new initiatives or opportunities that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, so, you know, we are scaling. We are, one of the things we are going to start doing, and you will see this, is we're going to put out sections called Allied Insights. So, for example, we're going to start with machine learning, AI technologies, what this means for prospective clients, entrepreneurs, founders, investors. And we are going to go through each and every sector of the tech economy, which is large of a certain size, where investors' acquisitions are happening, and we're going to put these insights out. It's going to be a lot of work, but we're going to put that out for free to the community. I think we're going to do some of that. You know, I personally have made some investments into companies which, frankly, have been done at pretty good valuations. I invested in a company doing 100 million ARR at a 400 million valuation, 4x. This is doing frothy market when folks were investing at 50, 100x. We may start a merchant banking model, and that may be something we might do. You know, we will continue to serve clients across all stages, promising technology companies. If we work with you, we promise we'll do our hardest to get you the best outcome. We enjoy working with entrepreneurs. Frankly, it's the most refreshing job you can have. And, you know, we love working with different technologies. We love learning and we want to be your partner, whatever it may be, whether it's an exit or a financing round. And we want to, you know, be thought leaders in our space and do things a little bit differently and with a fresher approach than the traditional way of investment banking.
And then just, Gaurav, on a final note, you know, obviously you've been in the industry for long enough to know that there's a variety of different back office infrastructure vendors in this space. Finalis came to the scene about 2 years ago, and it was around then that we, I think relatively early on in Finalis's own journey, that we got to know each other. Tell me a little bit about how you see Finalis in light of kind of the industry as a whole, and where you see kind of the opportunities for competitive differentiation here.
So, Federico, I think you and your team have done a phenomenal job in building Finalis. When you first came on the scene, what I liked about your approach was compliance is not going away. It's only going to get worse over time. But you come from a stellar background, and your team does as well, in that you guys have been in the legal side of things at the top tier firms. Banking is a very hard business, and compliance makes it even harder. You guys have taken, similar to Allied, a partnership approach. What can we do such that the bankers remain compliant, but at the same time, they are more efficient and more productive to the benefit of the end client? So your platform approach is resonating. You have built a tech-enabled service approach where the human interaction, which is very important in our business, with a software-backed approach that helps make it much, much easier for your clients to go about doing what they need to do. Frankly, a lot of the entrepreneurship has also percolated into the service business, right? Back in the day, there was the Goldman, there was the Morgan Stanley's of the world. Then you started with the Catalyst of the world, which is, by the way, a phenomenal firm, Allen & Co, phenomenal firm. But you're seeing a lot of people saying, why can't I be an entrepreneur in the service space? So you're going to see a lot of these firms going and becoming entrepreneurs. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is pretty hard. So whatever you can do to alleviate this kind of stress is key. And I think you guys are doing the right approach. Frankly, this thing about bringing this capital market guy from Lazard to, you know, help with some of the junior work, that's something you need to do. You're offloading some of the hiring requirements, some of the legal compliance requirement, being legally compliant and with a business angle to it. I think being commercially practical versus not being too onerous on legal requirements, I think is great. And I'm not surprised. That's the reason why you've gotten, you know, 160 plus bankers in your platform. That's the reason why you've gotten venture to invest in you. You know, I sold a compliance business 2 years back during COVID. It was done at a huge multiple of ARR. And the reason was compliance is not going away. And I wish you and the team the best. And it's great that you're here for advisors like ourselves to go serve their end clients.
Thank you so much, Gaurav, for those kind words. And with that, I would like to thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on the Pencils Down podcast. Very much looking forward to continuing to keep in touch with you as you grow and scale Allied, and looking forward to crossing paths again very soon.
Thank you so much, Federico. Really a pleasure being here, and thanks for taking the time.
Finalis is a broker-dealer platform with everything that M&A advisors, investment bankers, and placement agents need to succeed. We deliver a broker-in-a-box regulatory affiliation solution, replete with tech-enabled compliance, research and analytics, deal lifecycle management tools, and a first-of-its-kind deal marketplace. Learn more at www.finalis.com. You've been listening to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast player. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show. That helps us keep covering the latest in the private securities brokerage landscape. Thanks for listening. Until next time.